This is Money Moves on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Folks, welcome in. Morning on the West Coast, at the very least. JVT, Stormy Bonatoni out on assignment for the next 2 days. We'll be back together and happy on Thursday, but we've got plenty to get to, and Stormy, it actually has a lot to do with what we're going to be talking about over the next couple of days. Out on assignment for college football. We'll discuss a little bit of what she's learned over the next couple of days when she returns, but college football is the theme here at the network and for the show today. Absolutely jam-packed program and a lot to do with our college football betting guide that is out now. Very, very proud of the work that everybody's done with it. Very much worth checking out as well. Go to VSiN.com/subscribe if you want to get in on the action if you haven't already. $9.99 for your first month if you want to check it out. A lot of different packages as well for your first year too. So go to VSiN.com/subscribe to get in on what is, I think, some of our best work every single year. The over 300-page betting guide for every single team in college football, filled with best bets, season predictions, and a little bit more. As I mentioned, it's the theme of the show today. We're going to have quite a few of the contributors for the college football betting guide with us throughout the next 2 hours. Wes Reynolds is going to join us coming up in just about 15 minutes. We'll get his thoughts on the Big Ten, what his Indiana Hoosiers have in store. Does he buy into some of my potential trepidation when it comes to Hoover taking over a quarterback, or is Sigs just going to continue to keep this rolling with those Hoosiers and more in that conference? Tim Murray, his Fighting Irish, the favorite, at least in terms of their quarterback, CJ Carr, to win the Heisman, as well as the top team to win a national championship among some other contenders. Can they pull it off? And his love, sneaky love at the very least, Hawaii, which Justin, the trip to Hawaii will be coming up here pretty shortly. Big injury in the wide receiver room, so we'll see what he has to say about my predicted Mountain West champion and if that's going to impact him. Sean Green from the Sports Gambling Podcast boys are going to be with us too, a contributor, as well as Mitch Moss for our college football betting guide. He'll join us a little crosstalk before we get started on Follow the Money a little bit later today. But plenty of college football to come. Wanted to open up the show with a little bit of Major League Baseball, though, because now we have finally settled down. The trade deadline is passed. As we were on the air yesterday, some of the deals were coming down, but everything has been somewhat finalized now, and now we get to look at these teams as they are built and what we're going to do with them from a betting perspective. And I'll invoke the NBA very quickly in the sense of, we talk about at the trade deadline, okay, what do we bet now that all these deals have been done? And the easy answer, the cop-out answer is, well, for the most part, 99% of the time, maybe more, that would be 100, but we're talking about decimal points. This has all been baked into every single market you're looking at. Adley Rutschman going to the Boston Red Sox has been baked into the betting market. The Chicago Cubs and what they have done has been bet into the betting market or baked into the betting market. But there are times where maybe you value something a little bit more and what your current projections or predictions are for these teams don't match up with the betting market. So I wanted to take a look at some of the teams that stuck out to me with some of the moves that they made. And it's hard not to start with the Boston Red Sox. They have been a topic of conversation in Major League Baseball. They've been a topic on this show since we've talked about them many weeks ago to make the postseason. Now a very heavy favorite to do just that. Playoff odds for them, yes, no. Yes, minus 800, no, plus 550. But the acquisitions for the Red Sox, where we'll focus on here and how it ties into the betting market with where they're priced. Adley Rutschman, the big prize. Obviously, Curtis Meade, who they acquired but then immediately got hurt. He is on the IL. Eric Miller is part of the additions as well. But the two guys that we're really going to start to talk about and what their additions mean to Boston, of course, are in the lineup. And let's start with this basic question, which is, are the Boston Red Sox now good enough to win the American League? If you remember when we started talking about them during their run here on this show, one of the big things that I kept talking about was, yeah, they're good enough to make the playoffs now, and you feel confident if you've gotten in at any point that they're going to make it to the tournament. The question now becomes, will they be buyers at the deadline to improve a lineup which had been pretty middling average at best, despite the fact that this run had been going on, largely due to their pitching? And so they are buyers now. And so I think the short answer for them, are they good enough to win the American League, is yes. Rutschman and Meade, when they come back, will be added to this or this lineup, which will be a very big plus. Their current catcher rotation has been an absolute nightmare. Connor Wong and Jake Rogers, probably good men, but in terms of baseball players, not contributing the way that you want. Wong, a 255, 346, 362 slash line, two homers and 17 RBI. Rogers, 163, 270 with 296 with three homers and nine RBI. 72 in terms of the way to run it has created plus for the Boston Red Sox just from the position of catcher alone. That is 26th in Major League Baseball. Rutschman himself with the individual way to run has created plus of 115. So you know that he's going to be an improvement. And then you look at Meade coming back whenever he is healthy, 17 home runs, 48 RBI. They're going to make this better. The Red Sox for the season, 20th in weighted runs created plus, 15th in strikeout rate, 26th in walk rate, and in power. They needed these additions. And I think when you analyze just the additions themselves, you know that they're going to improve this lineup, and we know that they have the pitching already to do it. If you want to dissect what they've gotten from their arm so far to this point, ninth in ERA from their starters, eighth in expected, eighth in fielding independent. Their bullpen leads Major League Baseball both in ERA and in fielding independent. They just needed the offensive support. So as we look at this, and the short answer is, yes, they're good enough to win the American League. So what's the bet? What do we do here with them? And I think the question is whether or not you do want to invest in them at plus 550 to win the American League. And I think the answer becomes yes when you actually really analyze things. And I think at the top of it is, are the Yankees really the favorite to win the American League? The betting market says yes. And they added Luis Garcia Jr., who homered yesterday. Elliot Ramos is going to join the team today. But I don't know if they have enough. And then there's this question about Aaron Judge. But let's hear from Aaron Boone first, because last night he talked about the acquisitions and talked about the Yankees now with those two pieces being a little bit deeper.
Yeah, I'm excited. And with Ramos coming here, he'll be here tomorrow. Excited about him, especially in the short term while we're waiting to get some guys back. I feel like he can be really impactful for us, especially from the right side of the plate. And, I'm excited. I'm excited about the guys we have. And then ultimately, you know, as the month unfolds, as some guys start to become part of the team and the equation and just gets us deeper and stronger and more fortified as we go, I think we'll be in a good spot.
They might be, but then you get some troubling comments coming out of the front office. Brian Cashman yesterday, when asked about Aaron Judge, quote, "We're currently still very optimistic that he's going to return, but there's challenges with all of that too. There's a very high likelihood that he fits the time frame to come back and join us. That's what I'm hoping and holding on to." That doesn't really sound particularly positive for Judge and his eventual return. And even if he does come back, when does he come back? Is he immediately as effective? I think this is a Yankees team that is currently being priced that Aaron Judge is going to come back, and Aaron Judge is going to be Aaron Judge. But I don't know if we can assume that to be the case. And so if the worst of the timelines starts to unfold for the Yankees, in which Judge either doesn't come back or maybe is not anywhere near as effective since he is dealing with an injury, maybe all of a sudden you're looking at an American League that is mispriced with the Yankees at the top. And that would mean that there is some value in the Rays, for example, who did go shopping at the deadline as well, added a catcher. We'll see Freddy Peralta a little bit later today. We'll talk about some of the individual games coming up. But also maybe it means the door is open for a team like the Red Sox, who have been the hottest team in baseball for about a month now, just over a month, have one of the best pitching staffs, both bullpen and starter. And I know a lot of the times you look at some of the juicier prices that were available earlier in the year when they weren't playing particularly well, and you feel like you missed out and you don't want to invest now, but maybe there is some value in a near 6-1 price on the Boston Red Sox to win an American League that does look inherently flawed at this point right now and might have a favorite at the top that's not going to have its best player either at all or maybe fully healthy by the time he does, and if he does, return. But outside of the Red Sox, I think the other team that really does stick out, there are a couple. We'll get to the Guardians if we have some time, but the Chicago Cubs also up there in terms of one of the buyers at the deadline that you look at and you say, you know what? You like when a team addresses a weakness, and that's exactly what they did. Clay Holmes comes in, Ryan Zephyrjohn for my Angels, Braxton Garrett, Kevin Gausman among four pitchers acquired at the deadline, Tyrone Taylor in the outfield to help some of that rotation as well. Betting odds for the Cubs now post-trade deadline. They're a minus 2,000 favorite to make the postseason, 10-1 if you want to bet the no and the unthinkable happens, plus 370 if you think they can chase down the Milwaukee Brewers in the NL Central, plus 750 to win the National League World Series is at 15-1. And I think you have to love what the Cubs did. But it does beg the question, what does it mean in the National League, where they trail the Brewers as much as they do in the division, and where the Dodgers just simply exist after what they did at the trade deadline acquiring Tarek Skubal? Well, we'll get some of that answered today, actually. We'll see Skubal a little bit later against this Chicago Cubs team. Got thoughts on how that individual matchup is going to work. But I think in general, when you see a team that is 15th in starter ERA, 23rd in expected ERA from their starters, you see Clay Holmes coming in that when he is healthy, remember, sat out 2 months or sitting out 2 months with his broken leg, heavy ground ball guy, pitch to contact, kind of fits with pitching out there in Chicago, 239 ERA, a 331 fielding independent. You should be getting some good stuff out of Holmes. And Gausman, we at the least know that the good version of Kevin Gausman has been a very effective starter in his time in Major League Baseball, and he's getting some bad variants this season. So maybe a change of scenery is going to help him out. 313 batting average on balls in play for Gausman so far this year, 67.4% strand rate and a home run to fly ball ratio near 10%. So these sort of things should be better. 533 ERA for Gausman away from home. So I do wonder if maybe that does kind of affect starting now in a new park. But either way, maybe you get the best out of Gausman. He's also got a 360 FIP on the road. So, again, speaking to the bad side of variance that Gausman's been suffering so far this year. And then the bullpen gets a little bit of help with Zephyrjan. It's interesting. You know, the bullpen on the surface looks okay, 12th in ERA. But some of the underlying metrics for every arm coming in and out of that pen as a whole does lead a lot to be desired. 26th in expected ERA, 458 fielding independent, also 26th in Major League Baseball. So the question, as we asked with the Boston Red Sox, is what exactly is the bet to make here with Chicago? Had they acquired Reed Detmers, which was the false reporting yesterday, I think you like their chances a lot more. But getting Holmes and getting Gausman and kind of hoping that those guys, somewhat buying low, Garrett as well, you're going to get something enough that is going to put you on par with the Milwaukee Brewers or maybe even the Los Angeles Dodgers. I find it somewhat hard to believe. Maybe they could chase down the Milwaukee Brewers in the NL Central, but they and the Brewers both have one of the harder schedules left in Major League Baseball. Remaining strength of schedule for Chicago, floating around at 524, second hardest left in Major League Baseball. Seems somewhat hard that this is going to be the case. And then you look at what the road is for them, and it's similar to Boston. These are two teams that are staring a wild card spot right in the face. And while making the postseason is a very good thing, and I can make the argument that maybe the AL is a little bit weaker for Chicago, the variance of playing in a best of three with the powers at the top that are existent there, hard to really buy into what Chicago has done. We'll get to more of some of these trades. Really did like what the Guardians did, although our boy Adam Burke, when I texted him, seemed to not be as high on it maybe as I was. Maybe I'm being skewed by the fact that Joe Dell is now a member of the Cleveland Guardians. But when we come back, let's get to college football. The betting guide is out now. One of the many authors that did a great job, Wes Reynolds, is going to join us next, get his thoughts on the Big Ten, his best bets in the guide, and more. Don't go anywhere. So you're listening to this podcast because you want an edge. But what if I told you you're only halfway there? You've got the mindset. Now it's time to get the toolkit to match. Here's the thing. Pro bettors spend thousands on data and tools. But what they don't want you to know is that you can get the same edge for a fraction of the cost with VSiN Pro. VSiN Pro gives you access to expert picks, public betting data, prop projections, powerful tools, analytics, and more. Just tap the link in the description and see why thousands of bettors are already using VSiN Pro to cash more bets.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Over 340 pages of information, pure, unadulterated pigskin pontification when it comes to the world of college football. The College Football Betting Guide out now. And one of the many authors did a fantastic job with the Big Ten, as he always does, Wes Reynolds. Nice enough to give us some time here today at Wes Reynolds One. Also, of course, check out the work at Long Shots, our golf handicapping podcast here at the network, and the many articles usually up on the website at VSiN.com. Wes, it's good to talk to you, buddy. I have said it 1,000 times. Football season's here. All these camps are underway. We're just 2 days away from the Hall of Fame game. Like, we're here and I'm ready to go for college football as well. And let's go to your stomping grounds, the Big Ten, and specifically your boys. I wanted to start with Indiana. I think we're at the point now with Kurt Cignetti that we have blind faith that his teams are going to be competent and some of the best in the conference, respectively, potentially the country. I have questions about TCU transfer Josh Hoover. Do you think he's going to be able to work his magic here again, specifically with the way our boy Hoover has a penchant for turning the ball over at times?
John, good to be with you. And yeah, with Indiana starting from there, because my phone has actually been blowing up before we got on here to start the segment. I'm getting from my friends and fellow alums like, oh, man, we're disrespected at number 6 in the country in the coaches poll, as that has just been released this morning. Ooh. It's like, OK, if we could play disrespect and be the 6, by the way, they got 14 first place votes and still were 6. So this is like Caitlin Clark not being on the WNBA All-Star ballot with some of the players or something. I don't know how that computes, but nevertheless, to your question, it is going to be a little bit different with Josh Hoover, because I'm sure you've been out at some of the Raiders practices here over the summer. If you see Fernando Mendoza up close, he's a really big dude and he's an athlete. And Josh Hoover, I think, is a lot smaller. He's very generously listed at 6'2", by the way. So they're going to have to, you know, change some things around, maybe a little bit less RPO type stuff that they ran with Fernando Mendoza, but he can really throw the football. Now, you're right, the turnovers have been high, but I think Indiana's probably going to rely a little bit more on the running game, especially early in the season, because they do return essentially 5 starters on the offensive line, the 5th being Joe Brunner, who is the transfer and a starter at Wisconsin. But they might have, and this sounds odd to say if you've watched Indiana football over the years and seen some really bad offensive lines, they might have the best offensive line in the country with who they have. They have pros up there. They have continuity. All these guys started together last year. So you're going to see them, I think, run the ball maybe a little bit more and be a little bit less reliant on the passing game until they get in the conference play.
Yeah, pretty fascinating dynamic for the coaches poll, by the way. They had the second most first place votes, it looks like, with 14, and yet still ended up finishing sixth in the overall poll, which tells you where some of the other coaches decided to put them when it came to their ballot here. Wes Reynolds with us going over the Big Ten, wrote it up in the College Football Guide. Get it now, vsin.com/subscribe. Let's stay in the conference. I want to get to Penn State in a little bit. It's been a hot topic for us here on Money Moves because Stormy's very high on them. I think you are too. But at the top, it is, from a betting market perspective, a three-horse race, Ohio State, Indiana, Oregon. We talked about your Hoosiers. Let's talk about Ohio State and Oregon. Of that dynamic, would you also buy into my usual co-host mentality that she's big on Oregon, has bet them to make an appearance in the Big Ten championship game, and actually thinks that maybe that dynamic is, well, Oregon might be the best team in this conference?
I think that they very well could be, and they're certainly on a mission after getting humiliated there in Atlanta at the Peach Bowl, which was joyous from my perspective, maybe not from their perspective. But Dan Lanning, since he took over, they're 48-8, so he's a tough guy to bet against. And I think losing the coordinators, I know much will be made of that with Will Stein going to Kentucky and Lupoy going to Cal, but the two coordinators are promoted from within. They were both position coaches and co-coordinators as well. They returned 66% of their net production. That's one of the highest in the country. Of course, Dante Moore back. And I think just getting healthy on offense, because one thing about Oregon late in the season, they weren't very healthy in the backfield, and they had some injuries at receiver. They're back. The offensive line is going to be the question if it can hold up in the postseason, because we've seen it, John. They've been dominated in these games. They got dominated in the Peach Bowl, and they got dominated the year before against Ohio State in the Rose Bowl. That offensive line's got to be better, because on the other side of the ball, on the defensive line, they might have the best group in the country. So I do like Oregon as well. And you mentioned Ohio State. I do briefly want to say I think they're going to be an interesting team to watch, simply because we saw last year with Ryan Day going to the professional ranks to get that pro defensive coordinator with Matt Patricia, and it paid dividends. They were arguably the best defense in the country by a lot of metrics. But offensively, I want to see if they can do it again with Arthur Smith, who is now the offensive coordinator. Because the one thing about Ohio State, and you saw it in the playoff game against Miami, when they got behind, they didn't really go tempo. And they were the slowest paced team in the country, despite all the athletes that they have all over the place on that offense. So I want to see if they go a little bit more quick, no huddle, hurry up this year, and don't go so much tempo under the new OC Arthur Smith.
All right, let's talk about Penn State. Also, of course, a team going through some changes. Now they bring in Matt Campbell, who it kind of seemed to be a consolation prize for the most part for the Nittany Lions. But Campbell's been a good coach, a solid coach, brings in Rocco Becht and some other transfers from Iowa State. What are your expectations for Penn State? How do we play them?
Yeah, he wasn't the first choice. Maybe he ends up being the best choice, though. And there's a lot of continuity here. This is almost like Kurt Cignetti and James Madison to Indiana on steroids with who he brings in. He brings along 11 assistants, including the offensive coordinator, Taylor Mauser, plus 24 players. And keep in mind, this Iowa State team, they did go 11-2 2 years ago and made the Big 12 title game, did get beat by Arizona State. But this is a pretty good team. Now, I think the biggest question, we have the three burning questions in the guide. And, of course, the biggest question for me is, can Rocco Becht stay healthy? Now, he made 39 straight starts at Iowa State. He had a torn labrum, sprained AC joint, two concussions last season. Only did 7-on-7 in the spring, so he did have that offseason shoulder surgery. I think he's going to be good to go. And he's got familiar faces around him. Carson Hansen, their running back. Their wide receivers, their tight ends, plus the offensive line. So you're bringing in all these guys, and I think that there's continuity, and I think that they can meet the physicality of the Big Ten, because keep in mind, of course, they played the Cy-Hawk game against Iowa. They won three of the last four against Kirk Ferentz's guys. So I think the physicality is going to be there. Now, can the defense get up to speed? It's D'Anton Lynn, who returns to his alma mater, former Penn State player, was the USC defensive coordinator. They play a 4-2-5 now. But seven of the starters were also starters for Iowa State that were just outside the top 25 in scoring defense, only gave up about 20 a game. So I know it's kind of a common refrain, who is this year's Indiana? It maybe could be Penn State, not just because of the similarities with the transfers, but I think that they get a real break in the schedule. They don't have to play Ohio State. They don't have to play Oregon. They don't have to play Indiana. They do got to go to Michigan, and they do got to go to Washington, but they're going to be favored in every home game. And I think the Big Ten, it's going to shake out in the playoff like it did last year, where you get four Big Ten teams, and it's between them, Michigan, and USC for the fourth, and I think it's going to be the Nittany Lions.
So invoking Indiana and the job that Cignetti did, you know, you drew the parallel in your write-up for UCLA with what the Bruins potentially could do. Now, I don't think that you believe maybe for the win total that they could achieve that, but UCLA is a pretty fascinating team. What's your expectations for Chesney's first year out there?
Yeah, I think 6-6 and getting to a bowl game would be sure. Good for them. I thought 6.5 was a little bit high on the win total because the non-conference slate is actually tough. You do got to go to Cal and you do get San Diego State, and that's not necessarily a gimme. You don't get Ohio State and Indiana, but you go to Michigan, you go to Oregon. I'll be interested to see how they work with Nico there at quarterback. He's going to have a better offensive line, I think, because they're bringing in three starters that were all conference guys in the Sun Belt for JMU. But it's going to take some time to get into talent. Like, it's not going to be lightning in a bottle. But I do think Bob Chesney is a good coach, and he is a massive upgrade there at UCLA. That's a pretty low bar based on what they had. But they look to me like a 6-6 team that gets back bowl eligible, but they do have a lot of production coming in from JMU.
Wes Reynolds with us, the author for the Big Ten preview in our College Football Betting Guide. Check it out now. We'll get you out of here in this in the last 90 seconds. Matt Eumanns was on with us yesterday. He wrote up the Pac-12. Fresno State seems to be a pretty strong dark horse. Would you agree with that sentiment?
I do, John, and I bet them about $6 plus $6.50 to win the Pac-12. I know Boise State's the rightful favorite, but Boise, by the way, has to go to the Valley and play Fresno this year. And remember, Fresno licked him up there on the Smurf turf. I love the running game for these guys with Donaldson and company, and they're more of a power running team. And Fresno State kind of has that edge, right? I think they have it back now. Where remember in the Pat Hill days where they always stepped up against that good non-conference competition, and they were always more physical than I think some of these teams. And I think Fresno is going to do very well in their first season in the Pac-12, like the defense and love the running game, control the clock and continue that development. If they find a quarterback, I think that they're going to win that conference.
Wes Reynolds, one up on Twitter, one of four in the guide who picked Oregon to be the eventual national champion. All of the picks, previews and selections are in there. Wes, we appreciate it, man. And I mean it. Great job on the guide. Read your whole thing. It was absolutely fantastic, dude.
Thank you, pal. Appreciate you having me.
You got it. Wes Reynolds won, and again, wrote the entirety of the Big Ten up at the College Football Betting Guide. Didn't have time. A little bit later today, we're going to talk about some of the cellar dwellers in the SEC, maybe the Mountain West, if we have time. We talk so much about all of these teams that are expected to be at the top, national championships, Heismans, things like that. But, you know, there's an argument to be made, of course, that there is something we should look at with some of these teams at the bottom. Maybe some overs, maybe some unders when it comes to some of the win totals, exceeding expectations, or maybe falling short. But didn't get a chance to ask him about some of the cellar dwellers there in the Big Ten specifically. Rutgers, Maryland, a couple of teams that I think are pretty interesting. But Pac-12, I'll have to build on that later in the week as well, because that is a conference similar to the Mountain West, which they'll always be married to each other to an extent that might have a lot of volatility. We'll get back to college football coming up in about 15 minutes with Tim Murray on the other side. Deep baseball card today. Let's get started.
Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Football season's almost here, at least the real deal. I think it's actually here. Sharp Money, though, already moving. Here's how the Sharp Play sees it first. Exclusive data feeds from four major sports books, thousands of sharp bettors and professional syndicates tracked in real time before the market moves, all of it filtered and sorted by version 6.0 of their AI model. It's the machine, now the receipts. Every play logged, every result public, records back to 2011, live logs since 2021. It all feeds a live performance terminal. Check it out anytime. No login, no paywall. Nobody else in the industry runs one because most records couldn't survive. The sharp plays get audited daily by their own haters. No steam chasing, no stale trends, no recycled plays. Follow the sharp money at sharpplays.com. JVT, Stormy Bonatoni out on assignment for the next 2 days. She'll be back with us on Thursday. A lot of college football stuff that she is dealing with over the next couple of days, and we'll pick her brains on some of the things that she's learned over the next few. By the way, shout out to Stormy Bonatoni because she paid off the debt yesterday, took me to Barry's, and I had a wonderful meal here at Circa. And I will say I was a little tentative because I did not want to get in and really, you know, destroy her because you could do those sort of things. Really wanted to try to get the tomahawk for $300, but I elected not to, but appreciate it. And of course, the people at Barry's as well, because it was a fantastic meal. Although my choice of a side was criticized because the Brussels sprouts, not on the menu anymore, unfortunately. So I ordered the tater tots, and I was told that I should have gotten the asparagus instead. But the tater tots were excellent either way. We did. Philly cheesesteak egg rolls, as Justin, our producer, gets in my ear. Yes, the egg rolls are fantastic, as always. Fantastic as well is this baseball slate, and the Philly connection remains because the Philadelphia Phillies, one of the big favorites on the board today. So let's start there in a pretty interesting matchup. Washington Nationals will oppose those Phillies. Overnight price here at Circa, minus 235 in favor of Philadelphia. Jesus Luzardo is going to get the start. Zach Littell is not going to start, but he'll be following the opener role that has been slated to go. I think the last couple of starts for Palmquist has been the way this has gone. But look at this, upwards of minus 277 now for the Washington Nationals. And I'll say this, I did kind of want to make the case for the Nats to an extent. You know, you look at that initial price and you think, all right, we're talking about a baseball game, one single baseball game with Luzardo getting the start. And Luzardo last time out on the road against Miami, 6 1/3, gave up 6 earned runs, got to take a deep, struck out 5, walked 3. And at home, he has not really pitched that well. Phillies starter, 5.53 ERA, 4.10 fielding independent when he pitches in Philadelphia. And in fact, in the 10 starts in which he has pitched at home, Luzardo and the Phillies 4-6 in those 10 starts. So all of that you keep in mind with a minus 277 price tag now for the Philadelphia Phillies. Couple of things. And by the way, you should know too that Littell, now that he's been shifted into this, you know, quasi bullpen, like, you know, delayed starter role that he's been in, 3.89 ERA, 4.86 expected ERA, 4.45 FIP. So some signs that maybe he is due to get knocked around, but still has pitched relatively well. Last time out, he blanked the Toronto Blue Jays over 4 2/3 of work. Struck out 2, walked 3, so not really the best. But he hasn't allowed more than 2 earned runs in 6 of his last 7 appearances. So Littell in this new role has been a little bit better for the Washington Nationals. But I think the big thing here is, of course, the status of the lineup. Probably no James Wood today. Left the last game for the Washington Nationals with an oblique strain. Getting some imaging today. We'll see officially what the lineup looks like when that comes out. Obviously, no Luis Garcia Jr. either. So the lineup's going to be pretty shorthanded here for Washington. You get a pitcher that has some signs of the regression in his numbers, too. Kind of understand why the Phillies are at the least climbing the way that they are from the overnight of minus 235. One thing I wanted to bring up, and Justin, you're good with these props as well. With the shorthanded lineup for the Washington Nationals due to trade and injury, C.J. Abrams, 1-plus walk, plus 256. Are you going to pitch around Abrams to really not have to worry about anybody else in this lineup? Potentially maybe with something worth looking at here. We'll see if that actually comes to fruition. A walk rate of just under 9%, but if there's no other threats, maybe you're kind of pitching around him, not really giving him much to hit, and then you go from there. But at some point, does the value just say, yeah, like if you get to like plus 265-ish on the Nationals, is it worth just taking a stab from a pure probability standpoint? Probably, but I don't know if I want to ask the Nationals to get that done. Let's go to Atlanta, where Grant Holmes will take on Ryan Gusto today. Overnight line had the Braves at about $1.50 favorite. Total of 9 shaded to the over at minus 120. Gusto, third consecutive start. His last start against those Philadelphia Phillies, by the way. 5 innings pitched, 9 hits, 6 earned runs. Got to take it deep as well. Longest outing of the season for Gusto, and averages just over 4 innings per start. So we'll see what this means for him on the season. 5.31 ERA and a 4.65 expected. FIPs at 3.84. So maybe you can make the case that there are some good things coming for him. He's done a relatively decent job when it comes to keeping the ball in the park. Holmes has not been in the greatest stretch. Not exactly abysmal, but not exactly dominant either at this point. Last time we saw him was against the Nationals, 4 2/3, 5 hits, 3 earned runs, all solo shots that he had allowed, 4 strikeouts and 2 walks. He's allowed 3 earned runs exactly in each of his last 3 outings, Holmes has, and he hasn't pitched more than 5 innings since June 3rd. So if you look at that stretch, that dates back to June 9th, 8 starts, 9 appearances, 39 innings pitched, a 3.92 ERA, getting actually somewhat lucky. And if you look at some of the expected numbers, this would paint the picture of Holmes potentially getting got here. 5.01 expected ERA over the stretch that we're discussing, 5.10 fielding independent, 2.71 on the batting average and balls in play, strikeout rate under 20%, walk rate over 10%. So you're looking at Holmes and thinking that at some point, my man is probably due for some pretty poor performances. Some potential here. First 5 over, 4.5, minus 154, heavily priced. But considering the way Gusto has been pitching and what Holmes has looked like in recent stretches, that looks like something you could potentially look at. The Marlins' first 5 team total is over 2.5 at plus 120. Maybe something worth looking at there as well. And the total really for the game has not moved much, but isolating both of these guys for maybe a somewhat explosive first few innings could be something worth looking at for some bettors later today. Let's stick in the National League. We'll roll through this rotation order here. One of the more interesting matchups, of course, because we have two teams that are going at it for a playoff spot, Pittsburgh Pirates and the Milwaukee Brewers. Brewers, of course, in the lead in the NL Central, and the Pittsburgh Pirates trying to make their way in after being minor buyers at the deadline. Jared Jones getting the start today for the Pirates, and my man has been pitching extremely well. Last time we saw him was against the Snakes, six innings pitched, four hits, three earned runs, got taken deep in that one, struck out five, walked two, but he is not allowed more than three earned runs in his last seven starts. And in those seven, sporting a 260 ERA, a 208 expected ERA, and a 269 fielding independent. No real massive signs of regression here for Jones at all. One area in which he struggles, and maybe this plays into this one today, 37th percentile on the season for Jared Jones in chase rate. He's not getting hitters to chase outside of the zone. He faces a lineup today that lead the league in outside zone swing rate, the least amount, 28.4%. Second in walk rate as well. It's a patient lineup, so they'll probably be sitting on anything inside of the zone, allowing whatever breaking stuff to pass by. So we'll see if maybe that works in their favor from a matchup perspective. Maybe it does. But it's hard not to like Jones just given the way that he has been pitching. And so you see the overnight price of minus 165 in favor of the Brew Crew down to minus 140. At a couple of spots. Total as well. Opened up 8, shaded to the under at minus 125. We're sitting at about a 7 in some places right now, shaded to the over at minus 125. And Henderson on the other side has been pitching really, really well since returning. 257 ERA, 233 expected, 324 fielding independent. And if you look at the last start on the road against San Francisco, blanked them, struck out 7, walked 2 over the course of 5 and 2/3. So he has been pitching pretty well himself. Would it be surprising if you get a pitcher's duel here? And that's why you see this low total. But maybe, just maybe, the Brewers, with their patience, can make Jones work a little bit more than he has in these recent starts because of his penchant to struggle when it comes to getting guys to chase. Maybe they can drive that pitch count up, have a little bit more success, get some guys on. Team total for the Brewers here, 3.5 over minus 154. All right, headliner today, and it is in the National League. We will see the debut of Tarek Skubal in a Los Angeles Dodgers uniform on the road against the Chicago Cubs. We got some heavy favorites on the road. Philly's the biggest one. Dodgers, one of those big ones as well. They open up as a $2 favorite against the Chicago Cubs. And I think the market's getting this right. Justin, you and I talked about this before the show. Man, it seemed like a lot. And sure enough, minus 186 now for the Dodgers. Some spots, minus 190 off of that overnight of $2. 9 shaded to the under at minus 120. We've seen a little bit of a push here to the over. But Skubal, look, you don't need any sort of introduction here. It's a 279 ERA, 298 expected ERA. His last start versus Baltimore looked mortal. Struck out 6, walked 1, but gave up 3 earned over the course of 6 2/3. I think this is more about the pricing. Look, Skubal's been absolutely fantastic, and the Dodgers are a pretty good team, but it's not like you're taking on the Angels, for example. You're taking on the Chicago Cubs, and Javier Assad has been pitching relatively well. 375 ERA, 458 expected, maybe some room for some regression to the mean there for him. Last start, gave up 1 earned run over 4 1/3 against the St. Louis Cardinals, but he has not allowed more than 2 earned runs in his last 5 starts. And out there at Wrigley, Assad, for whatever reason, has pitched extremely well. 28 1/3, 22 ERA. The 507 FIP would tell you that he is due to get absolutely rung here at some point. So maybe you could look at an over, which we have seen the market move there toward. But I think just from a pure pricing standpoint, when you saw that plus 175 or better on the Cubs, that to me was a number play just on Chicago, considering the way the side's been pitching and the fact that I just think maybe the market, with his power rating, with how good Skubal is, has the Dodgers just a little too high here. Last one, and we'll get to this maybe a little bit more extended, but a big series, San Diego Padres, Arizona Diamondbacks, Randy Vasquez, Eduardo Rodriguez. I think there might be something here too. Rodriguez has been pitching extremely well. Opened up as a $1.28 favorite at home on the overnight. 8.5 shaded to the over at minus 120. We're seeing this down to minus 115. I think that makes a ton of sense. We'll throw Randy Vasquez to the side a little bit here, but this Padres group, I think, can get to Eduardo Rodriguez. We're waiting for this thing to drop at some point. I mean, non-existent swing and miss stuff on the season for Rodriguez. 37th percentile in chase rate, 12th percentile in whiff rate, 10th percentile in strikeout rate, average command. Maybe this is the day where he gets beat up. Maybe it's against the Padres. We'll have more on the National League and, of course, American League Baseball slate. But when we return, Tim Murray is going to join us, get his thoughts on his Irish and what we can expect from Hawaii and more when he joins us on the other side here on Money Moves.
Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
football betting guide out now. Make sure you check this bad boy out. Absolutely fantastic. Go to VSiN.com/subscribe. A lot of different ways that you can get your hands on this bad boy, including a starting offer of $9.99 or more. Again, VSiN.com/subscribe. Only part of a VSiN Pro subscription, so make sure you go and check that out today. What are the contributors when it comes to some of the best bets in the guide? And a man that knows a thing or two about the Fighting Irish and more, and I think a degree holder with both Notre Dame and Hawaii, is one Tim Murray, who will be with us here now on the Progressive Guest Line. I want to start with something that I care truly about, and I know that you will as well. I know everybody wants to know about the Irish. I want to know, how screwed are my Rainbow Warriors with Pofele Ashlock and this knee injury that he is not going to be available for the year?
Yeah, it's not ideal, obviously, when you're talking about your best receiver being out here. But, you know, it's a system that is tried and true. You know, it started with, obviously, June Jones, the run and shoot that Timmy Chang had his prolific career being the quarterback of. And now you've got Micah Alejado in his second full season. A lot of expectations with him. They did go to the transfer portal. Obviously, they lost a couple of pieces to, you know, power four programs. But I do anticipate this offense still to hum along, but look, you can't sit here and say it's not a loss to lose someone like Pofele Ashlock, who they were certainly expecting a lot from. So, you know, week zero, they go to Stanford, revenge spot for the Cardinal, 4-point underdogs right now at DraftKings. And then that week one game, that JVT, I know you and I will be up late watching on the CW when Hawaii hosts UNLV. So a couple of big ones early on for the Rainbow Warriors. I saw you wrote up them to win the conference. I don't think it's the craziest thing in the world. When you look at their schedule, they avoid Air Force, which they beat last year. But I expect Air Force, as you do as well, to be much better this year. And, you know, late in the season, they go to Albuquerque. So I think Hawaii's got an opportunity, especially week one, UNLV, to make some noise there at home. And as I've mentioned a million times, Timmy Chang, since becoming the head coach at Hawaii, this will be year number five. Best cover team in college football at home is the Hawaii Rainbow Warriors since he took over as the head coach there. So short home dog week one, I can almost assure that I will probably be on the Rainbow Warriors in that spot against the Rebels in what should be a fun one out on the island.
So Hawaii was also, so I picked them, and I have a ticket on them to win the Mountain West. It was 6-1 when I bet them in our college football betting guide. They were my group representative to make it into the college football playoff. If they win the Mountain West, I think they'll have a pretty good shot at that. We'll see what the resume ultimately looks like at the end of the season. But let's stick with these teams. Big picture, who do you think this group of six representative is going to be? Because I keep looking at the Pac-12 and I keep looking at the Mountain West. And Tim, I'm not overtly impressed really by any of these teams for the most part. And maybe it's actually somebody we're not thinking of, like a Memphis or something, and not one of Boise State, UNLV, or some of these other Mountain West / Pac-12 representatives that are keep thrown out there.
Yeah, it's funny, JVT. I just got off the air. I do a radio hit in Memphis every Tuesday. We were talking about the Tigers. They're around 10-1 to make the college football playoff. Their schedule is pretty challenging. They play. They have an opportunity right out of the gates, as we discussed, to take on UNLV in week zero. They're a short underdog at Allegiant Stadium. And then in week two, they go up to the Smurf Turf and take on Boise State. They also traveled to Annapolis to take on Navy later on in the season. So there's a lot of challenges there for Memphis. You know, the American, I think, as you look at it, I would say from top to bottom, in my opinion, is the best non-power conference. But will they cannibalize themselves? I think UTSA is a pretty strong team this year down there in the American. You look at Memphis, you know, they bring in Charles Huff. I actually think it was an upgrade. I'm not the biggest Silverfield fan as he goes to Arkansas. I think that was one of the worst hires, to be honest, of this cycle for Arkansas to go out and poach him for Memphis year after year. I thought he underachieved. But, you know, to go back to Boise State, I think you look at week one, they take on Oregon. They're north of a 3-touchdown underdog. And then after that, JVT, I think there are opportunities to be had. If you were to combine, and I'm curious your thoughts on this, if you were to combine the Pac-12 and Mountain West into one conference, I think Boise State power rated probably the highest of any of those teams. But then after that, I would put UNLV, I would put New Mexico higher than anyone in the Pac-12. I think Fresno State's going to be pretty solid this year, and they do host Boise State early on in the season. Boise State's the favorite to win or to emerge out of the group of six, but it's hard for me right now, JVT, on August 4th to say put money on Boise at +450, because I think the substance in the Pac-12 is just not really there. They are not the best conference in the non-powers. I think the American is better. And honestly, I think pound for pound, the Mountain West is slightly better than the Pac-12, despite some of those bigger name teams moving on to the Pac-12.
I tend to agree. And even the bottom of the Mountain West, while it doesn't look sexy on paper, Northern Illinois actually got a key transfer that I think he was playing at UNC that he fell out of. And all of a sudden he's going to be out there for the Huskies, potentially playing quarterback. Wyoming should be better. I think Nevada's got some upside too. You look at the Mountain West as a whole, Tim, I think there's an argument from a power rating standpoint, at least what the betting market's telling us. I wouldn't agree, but North Dakota State is probably power rated higher than the next team in the Pac-12 as well, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I think North Dakota State, you wrote it up in the guide, and I thought it was a really good point. I think North Dakota State is getting a little bit too much love for what they were able to do. I don't think they're going to immediately have success like a team like James Madison. Remember when JMU jumped from the FCS into the Sun Belt, they were a top 25 team before, I think, losing a couple games at the end of the season. Now, they had Kirk Cignetti as their head coach. He's ended up proving to be a pretty darn good coach, as we have seen him going to Indiana and bringing on the biggest turnaround in the history of the sport. And look, North Dakota State, as you pointed out, they play based off of the odds. They play UNLV, New Mexico, Hawaii, and Air Force, all on the road. Like, the Mountain West did not do the newbie any favors by having them go on the road to the four best teams outside of the Bison when you look at the odds market. So, look, I think long-term, it was a massive coup by this conference to pull in a North Dakota State that has a massive fan base, that has so much history. And I think over the long haul, they should be a really quality team in this program, in this conference. But I do think North Dakota State, what's their win total? 8.5. I think you wrote it up for the guide. I would look under on North Dakota State just because of the challenges and the unique aspect of jumping from the FCS to the FBS. Look, it's one thing, as we've seen, to go up and play one game against an FBS opponent that might not be all that geared up to play you, but you better believe that UNLV, New Mexico, Hawaii, and Air Force, when the Bison come to town, they're going to be more than ready to go to take on North Dakota State.
All right, we should. And Tim Murray is with us here, host of VSiN Primetime, my old stomping grounds, VSiN contributor across. And of course, what you should really be getting into, which you probably already are if you watch and listen to this network, College Football Betting Podcast, wherever you get your podcasts. Absolutely tremendous work from Tim. All right, let's talk about your boys, the Fighting Irish. I think there's a lot of different ways to ask you about them, but we'll just say this. Are they the best team in the country?
I think if I'm splitting hairs, I would probably lean there in the top three. I don't know if they're number one. I know Matt put them at number one in his power ratings. I'm not going to push back on that. I probably would say Ohio State, pound for pound, is the top team in the country. But look, when you look at what they have coming into this year, the motivation of being left out of the playoff a year ago, their mantra, leave no doubt. And then you look at the schedule. Look, the schedule, I think, has obviously some challenges on it. It's not the easiest schedule. It's not Texas Tech, let's be honest here, right? They do play Miami, who's power rated, probably a top seven team. They play BYU. They're a top 15 team. SMU, probably top 25. And we're talking about power ratings. I'm not talking about the coaches poll, which is an abomination, but that's a discussion for another day. The schedule's manageable, especially out of the start. You can ease in, as opposed to last year where they had to start the season on the road to Miami, and then they lose to Texas A&M late in that contest. And then after that, they dominated everybody. The positives for Notre Dame obviously starts at the quarterback position, JVT. CJ Carr, this guy has checked every box heading into this offseason. He goes down to the Manning Passing Academy. Todd McShay has glowing remarks for him, saying he was the best quarterback and it wasn't even close. I tend to disagree with that. I'm sure there were really good quarterbacks down there. But the questions on offense, JVT, are obviously at running back. You lose Jeremiah Love and Jadarian Price, two first-round running backs. Does Aeneas Williams pick up that slack? What does that running back room look like? And who's going to emerge at wide receiver? Jordan Faison has been really strong over his career there for the Irish in the slot. They went out and got two transfers from Ohio State. Can one of them become a big-time target for CJ Carr? The guy for me that I think is the X factor offensively is Ian Premmer. True freshman, five-star out of Kansas. I think he can make some big-time plays. And then defensively, JVT, I think they are the best defense in college football. You can, you know, look at a couple other spots from every level. In my opinion, I think Notre Dame is the best defense in college football. So if they're not in the playoff, they're minus 800 to make the playoff. It's a complete disaster. CJ Carr probably gets hurt. But the question is, the depth of this team, JVT, is it going to be enough to have them standing in Las Vegas in late January? I think they're among the top three or four teams in the country, and then we'll see how it plays out come the college football playoff in January.
Yeah, Tim referenced the college, the coaches poll. Notre Dame, fifth in the coaches poll, and four other teams with more first place votes than the Irish. Tim, thank you very much, sir. Appreciate it.
All right, JVT, see you, man.
Yep, you got it. Tim Murray, VSiN, Primetime, and the College Football Betting Podcast. Check that out. And the College Football Betting Guide, VSiN.com/subscribe.